إن الحمد لله نحمده ونستعينه ونستهديه ونستغفره ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا، من يهده الله فهو المهتد ومن يضلل فلن تجد له وليا مرشدا. وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له، وأشهد أن محمدا عبد الله ورسوله، أدى الأمانة وبلغ الرسالة ونصح لهذه الأمة، فصلاة الله وسلامه عليه. ألا إن أصدق الحديث كتاب الله، وخير الهدي هدي محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم، وشر الأمور محدثاتها، وكل محدثة بدعة، وكل بدعة ضلالة، وكل ضلالة في النار. Brothers and sisters, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. I would like to thank all of you for attending, and I would like to thank MASS for inviting me, and I hope I will do a good job, and me by delivering and you by being patient and listening to what I have to say. And these talks have been prepared long time ago to be delivered on the 18th and 19th of September in the United Kingdom. A big event is happening there where I will introduce in 2 days the four personalities that I will be introducing. But instead of Imam Nawawi, I'm talking about Al-Hasan al-Basri. Now, these four personalities, just to give you a background, I've introduced them in three classes. So Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, the person; Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, the character; Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, the society. These will be delivered in the UK. And Nawawi again, the human being, the person, the household, the alim, and the works, and the interaction with society, rulers, etc. Hasan al-Basri, three courses or three classes, so a total of 12 classes. When I was asked by MASS to do these topics, what I did is that I went to these three classes and chose from the strongest point what I think represents the character. My aim and objective from these personalities, whether these personalities or the four imams, for example, Imam Malik, Abu Hanifa, etc. And indeed, even when I, back in 1993, I was an undergraduate student, used to talk about the seerah. This is how I began, by narrating the seerah to the students. And I was always, as a student, I didn't want the topic to be boring. Boring, but, you know, sometimes not everyone likes politics. Not everyone likes political history. I personally like it. I like to know the rulers. For example, the Umayyad Khilafah, I like to memorize the name of the rulers. The Abbasiyat Khilafah, I would like to, but not everyone likes to do that. Not everyone would like to know the personalities insofar as they were people of knowledge, good memory, الرحلة في طلب العلم, traveling everywhere. Because we don't have the capability. I don't have the capability to travel to Damascus and Hijaz. Others say I'm not blessed with good memory. So I'm trying to think of ways of how to reintroduce these personalities, especially to the youngsters who are used to the digital and the sound bites and the music. How I can reintroduce to them complex characters that at the outset might sound boring. How to reintroduce them in an interesting manner. And so my aim, my objective is at the outset is to make them familiar and relevant by focusing on the human side of the personalities. Yes, I appreciate Imam Nawawi or Ibn Taymiyyah or Al-Ghazali. I will not be able to say Imam with everyone, so there is no disrespect if I just said Nawawi, Al-Ghazali, because I'll repeat them too much. There is no disrespect, or there is I'm not undermining their achievement in knowledge, but all what I'm trying to say is that their outcome, their product in society as knowledgeable people have to be understood as a process, as an accumulation of many factors, conditions, and circumstances that have built to the production of this personality that is called Imam al-Nawawi. The problem with us as readers of history is that we come at the final stage to read about Imam al-Nawawi, and then we are shocked. He is magnificent, he is great, I can never be like him. But you have to bear in mind that this person was at one day like you and me. He was a child, he was a young boy, he was a teenager. He knew nothing, not a lot at the beginning. What he and you have something in common is the himma, is the determination, is the enthusiasm. But the difference might be is that he utilized that enthusiasm, utilized the conditions. And this is why I believe that through reintroducing them in a new way, we can generate the himma to be like them, not in the field that they pursued it, but in the field that you think you are good at. You see, these people, at the outset, they recognize that they are special, that they recognize that they have something to offer society, but more importantly, that they recognize that this is exactly what I want to do. For example, Imam Abu Hanifa was not impressed by the muhaddithin or by the mufassirin. He attended lectures, he attended talks, he was impressed by these people, but he felt that this is not for me. I don't want to grow up and be a muhaddith. I don't want to grow up and be a mufassir. I want to grow up and be a faqih. This is exactly what I want to do. And I always give this example of this young boy, Abdullah ibn Wahab, one of the students of Imam Malik. Imam Malik was sitting in a circle, big circle like this, in Hijaz, in Medina. And in Medina, you know, they don't have elephants. Elephant is an imaginary animal that no one has seen before. But it happens that an elephant was in Medina and accidentally passed by the door of the mosque. And all the students were shocked to see that elephant. And everyone left the circle and left Imam Malik in the circle, except Abdullah ibn Wahab, who was at that time a teenager. He is called Abdullah ibn Wahab al-Masri because he is from Egypt. He traveled all the way from Egypt to learn under the feet of Imam Malik. And then he was the carrier of the Maliki Madhab into Egypt and the rest of the nearby countries. Imam Malik looked at Abdullah ibn Wahab and said, "Why didn't you go with the rest of the students to see the elephant?" He said to him, "Ya Imam, I came all the way from Egypt, not to see the elephant, but to sit and look at you and learn from you." To me, this indicates focus. It indicates that I know exactly what I want to do. I'm not going to be distracted by this elephant, by this job opportunity, by this offer, by this obstacle, by this impediment. I know that it's going to be difficult, but I am focused and I want to be in that circle, in that direction, and in that sphere. Abdullah ibn Wahab is a fascinating character. He says, and the story is, we are not talking about Abdullah ibn Wahab, and this is my problem sometimes, is that I go into, so you'll have to excuse me, or just say, please come back to what you are saying. But just to end it with Abdullah ibn Wahab, he just says a fascinating thing, which is very relevant to what I have to say to you about these characters. He said, "I accompanied Imam Malik for 20 years. In 1 year, I learned the ilm of Imam Malik. And in 19 years, I learned the adab of Imam Malik. I learned the manners of Imam Malik. I spent 1 year learning the ahkam and the madhab and the fiqh of Imam Malik. But the rest of the 19 years, I was learning from how Imam Malik was behaving, was conducting his attitude." Imam Malik is a school not just in fiqh, but in adab and in manners and in characters and in morals. He said, "I spent 19 years learning from the manners of Imam Malik." Does this shock you? If this shocks you, then listen to what he says. In addition to that, he says, "And I wish," Abdullah ibn Wahab said, "And I wish that the rest, that the entire 20 years was spent in learning the adab of Imam Malik." It is as if he is saying that 19 years is not enough to accommodate and absorb and learn the entire morals and attitudes of Imam Malik. Back to the aims and the objectives. Making them familiar and relevant by focusing on their human side. How do you do this? Well, we look at their relations with their parents. They certainly had mothers and fathers. Let's take the camera and go back. Let's stop and freeze the camera of the historian that is focusing on Imam Ibn Taymiyyah, the Muqatil, and the Mujahid. Let's take the camera back and focus on Ibn Taymiyyah when he was a young boy, how he conducted and how he dealt with his mothers and father, with his mother and father. And the opposite, how the mother and the father dealt with this son? How did they provide the environment for him or her? If we are talking about women scholars or women great personalities, how did they provide the environment for him to grow, to attain such a great status in the history of Islam? Relations with wives and children. How Ibn Taymiyyah did not get married, Imam Nawawi did not get married, I'm sorry, but someone like Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, how did he used to behave with his wife? How did he used to behave with his children? You see, I am not here, although Brother Wasim said, Khalifa Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. I am not going to talk about Umar ibn Abdul Aziz as the Khalifa. I'm not going to mention a word of politics. And this is, to me, a new way to reintroduce Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. You see, the classic way of introducing Umar ibn Abdul Aziz is this political cue, that he was the Khalifa al-Adil, the just, that filled the Umayyad Khilafah with Adil and justice, etc. for 2 years. No one was poor in his era, etc. But to me, I want to take the camera a little bit backward and see what sort of conditions brought Umar ibn Abdul Aziz to be the... It's impossible for one day to have this radical shift to a just ruler. It's impossible. You some people say to me, Umar ibn Abdul Aziz was this spoiled rich boy, etc. The following day he became the Zaid. It's impossible to have this radical shift. Impossible. So there is a mother, there is a father, there are institutions. And this is where I move from the wives and the children's and talk about the tarbiyah institution that were acting as supplements to the parents and to the mother. What are these tarbiyah institutions that were acting in addition to the household? The teachers. And the teachers, I divide them into two types. Teachers of knowledge. You sit with a teacher and, like me. I come and give you some knowledge that I've stole from this book or this or that book. But there is another form of teacher. The one that was manifested in the character of Imam Malik, the Mu'addib. The Mu'addib, the one that gives you knowledge with adab. The one that tells you how to conduct your attitude and behavior. Not just in the city, not just in the circle, in the mosque, but outside in the public sphere, in the workplace, in the market. That's why Imam Abu Hanifa was a fascinating example for someone who wanted to see a faqih operating in a business context. We have this problem of this duality and secularism of someone giving us rhetoric about Islam. You have to be this, you have to be that. But going outside the mosque and you see him or her, how she or he conducts his attitude in the marketplace, etc., it's totally different. Not to mention even the household. The beauty about these people, and that's why their magnificence was not just about them being teachers in the knowledge sense, but in the adab sense, is that they encompass the two in one personality, and they were giving a homogeneous message to the children, to their students. And that's why the students, and this is the beauty of it, came from a Muslim good household, then they were taken by the sheikh or the mu'addib to carry on the message, to carry on the role of tarbiyah and ilm. And then the third cycle is that they grow up and become teachers for students. And those students come and continue with the cycle. So there is a cycle in our Islamic history. It begins with the household, responsible for producing the teenagers, potential ulama. They are co-opted by the shuyukh. Shuyukh plus mu'addibin. Then they grow up, those students, and become shuyukh. And then they recruit students, and so on, and so on. This is the cycle that produced people like Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, like Ibn Taymiyyah, like Nawawi, endless names. But of course, we have to talk about only four. So the themes that I introduced throughout these four characters are to focus on the importance of the household. This is, to me, crucial. And this is why I hope what I am saying will be relevant to the parents. Look, the target audience of these talks are parents, students, youngsters, and professionals. And I try to draw comparisons to see how Abu Hanifa or how Umar ibn Abdul Aziz or how Imam al-Nawawi could be of relevance to the professional or to the parent or to the students or to the youngsters. The importance of the household, the importance of the company, the friends, This is very important, very crucial, because, you know, I'm not going to tell you, company, friendship, role models, emulation, imitating, being affected and influenced by who you sit with all the time. Seeking knowledge, okay, this is something that is well known. Time, how they looked at time, how they behaved towards time. And time did not mean summer, winter, school, college, university, pension, retirement. No, this is a labor-oriented division where you are geared towards being perceived as a human being in this producer-consumer relation. To them, time means that that moment where they can breathe, where they can read, where they can produce knowledge, etc. This is for them. And that's why you see them studying in the night. You see them studying in the morning. You see someone like Imam Malik and Abu Hanifa seeking knowledge at the time of Eid, where it's a public holiday. And Imam Malik goes to Imam al-Dhahabi, Imam al-Zuhri, and knocks on the door and say, "Ya Sheikh, teach me." And Imam al-Zuhri says, "It's Eid, ya Imam, ya Malik." He says, "Ya Sheikh, teach me hadith," and he will give him the hadith. Public holiday. You see, those are the characters that were special. We can be like them. Okay, you might say, "You mean I can be a faqih like Imam Malik?" No, but you can be like them in the himmah. In creating this similar household, you say, "I'm not married." Yes, indeed, this is the point. When you get married, make sure that you establish this household. You say, "I'm married, but I don't have children." Indeed, when you have children, make sure that you are that parent, etc., etc. Okay, I must confess, household is easy, but then when it comes to teachers, it's a problem. I know. But at least let me tell you, so that in the future we can have mu'addibin and we can have teacher. The importance of activism, enthusiasm, and productivity. This is a big topic. Al-himma. Just in one word, al-himma. And there are books on that. Al-himma fi talab al-ilm. Al-himma fi al-ibadah. Al-himma fi al-jihad. Himma in everything. And you hear stories that are amazing. You can't believe it. You say you are lying or you are exaggerating. No. But when the himma, when the enthusiasm, when the determination is in the hearts of anyone, he can do anything. Anything. Tarbiyah institutions, and I've spoken about this, the mu'addib and the teachers, etc. Recognizing one's abilities and talents. I've spoken about this as well. Manners. I've spoken about the adab and the importance of it. Connecting with Allah, piety, and taqwa. We'll see manifestations of that. These people were arguing and debating, etc. But they were fearful people. They feared Allah. Imam Abu Hanifa, who used to be the harshest argumentator against his teacher, Hammad ibn Abi Sulaiman. And Hammad looked at his colleague, another teacher, and said, "You see this? You see this student?" And the teacher says, "He argues too much." He says, "But he prays in the night and cries." You see, Imam Abu Hanifa combined this forceful, powerful tongue to argue, but he's not of those solid hearts, because he prays in the night and makes tahajjud and he cries. It is this combination. Where did he get this from? From the teacher, from the mu'addib, from the household. You see, again, it's a cycle. And finally, the importance of the Islamic identity. These things will come across maybe in an organized or an unorganized way throughout these four personalities. Teaching and learning methods. I will rely mostly on the power of the narrative. Narrative. I believe in the power of the narrative, the power of the stories. It works with children. It works with women, it works with men, it works with everyone. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala relied on al-qasas to deliver the message about Musa and about Isa and about Dawood, etc. Knowing, and Allah created us, and He knows that we like stories. We like to follow the narratives and what happens next. List of lectures, Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, 1st century, Imam Nawawi, 7th century, Imam al-Ghazali, 5th century, Ibn Taymiyyah, 8th century. And this is another objective. You see, these characters are spread throughout the centuries. Of course, okay, an implicit message to tell you that the great people are never focused in one period. Okay, this is the implicit message. But to me, what is more important is to give you a flavor of our Islamic history. Because you cannot talk about Islamic personalities without giving a social, political, and economic context to how these personalities have existed. So, one of the aims and objectives is to introduce Islamic history to you, but in a very subtle way, so as not to bore you to death, or not to turn history into dates and figures. And this is boring, I know, to some of you. So I introduce Islamic history through personalities. And not the entirety of the personality, but through the human dimension of that personality, which then you can feel that they are relevant to you. And probably, if I succeed, feel that Islamic history is not something of the past, but something of contemporary relevance today. Okay, I've said enough about the introduction. Is it clear? I don't want to see people yawning, because then I begin to doubt myself. Am I boring, or then I'm put off? But if I speak too much, if you feel bored, please tell me enough. We want to go home, then we will talk about something else tomorrow if you want. Okay, Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. I will talk about two things, okay? Two things. One, the conditions, the circumstances that have created Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, okay? The second is the output of these circumstances in the attitude and behavior and interaction of Umar ibn Abdul Aziz with his household, with his wife, with his children. Okay, no politics. I'm not talking about Umar ibn Abdul Aziz and the Ra'iyya, and the masses, and the people. This is something you can find it in the literature. This is something you can find it in the books. Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, al-Khalifa al-Adil, al-Khalifa al-Rashid, al-Khamis, etc., etc. But what is not mentioned that frequently is what we are going to talk to you, talk about today. Who is Umar ibn Abdul Aziz? Let's go back to an incident. Who is Umar ibn Abdul Aziz? Freeze this question. Let's go back to an incident that happened to Umar ibn al-Khattab radiallahu anhu. Umar ibn al-Khattab, when he became Khalifa, he had this habit of going and checking that everything is all right in the city. At that time, there were no intelligence or no mukhabarat or no police force developed in the same way as they are developed today. So Umar ibn al-Khattab, al-Khalifa al-Adil, was once walking close to one of the roads in Mecca or in Medina. And the houses at that time were very low and very close to each other, especially the poor houses, to the extent that if you are quite tall, you can overlook from the window to the what's happening inside. And things were not as... meaning that if a conversation takes place, you can more or less overhear it. They were not that blocked with walls, etc. So he overheard this conversation between a woman and her daughter, between a mother and her daughter. And here I want the sisters to focus a little bit more, because it's here that we talk about the female dimension of the life of Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. And in these stories, everyone can draw his or her own conclusion. I'm giving you my own reading, and I hope that by that I am opening opportunities for you to explore further and develop it further. He overhears this conversation between a mother and her daughter. They are quite a poor family from Bani Hilal. Bani Hilal is one of the Arab tribes that are quite poor. They sell milk. They go into the houses, knock on the doors, and sell milk. And the mother is saying to the daughter, let's put more water in the milk so that we increase the amount of the milk and then we earn more money. The mother is saying this to the daughter. The daughter said to her, but oh mother, didn't you hear Amir al-Mu'mineen, Umar ibn al-Khattab, say that do not mix milk with water, because this is ghish, this is cheating, this is haram? She said, وَأَيْنَ عُمَرُ? And where is Umar now? Where is Umar now? There are no intelligence and there are no security cameras. Where is Umar now? And Umar is next door. Where is Umar now? She says, يا أمي ما كنت لأطيعه في العلن وأخالفه في السر. She said in one narration, Oh my mother, I would not obey Amir al-Mu'mineen in public and oppose him or don't do what he does or what he says in private. And in another narration, she says, this is the famous narration, if Umar does not see us, then the Lord of Umar sees us. And Umar ibn al-Khattab asks the servant next to him, he says, put a cross on the door. Put a cross on the door. Let's mark this door. Because this is a door of a household of a woman of taqwa. He says, put a cross on the door and inquire for me if this girl that we overheard her speak is married or not. And the following day, the person asks and learns that she is not married. Then Umar ibn al-Khattab goes to his sons. And we might only know the son of Umar ibn al-Khattab, Abdullah ibn Umar, because he's famous, Nazar. But Umar ibn al-Khattab had other sons. One of them is called Asim. Then Umar ibn al-Khattab said, I have a daughter. I have a girl available for marriage. Abdullah ibn Umar said, you know, I am married. And everyone said, you know, I'm married, except Asim, he was a bachelor. He said, Ya Abi Zawijni Iyah. Oh, my father, I trust your choice. Get me married to her. He said, go to that door and ask, and knock on the door and ask for her hand. Now, I hear stop and cannot, sometimes, and this is just a personal confession, I read a statement and I just sometimes close the book and just think about 60 lessons that I can learn from this incident, simple incident. One incident is that this daughter is having an influential effect on her mother. She is teaching her. The daughter is turning into a tarbiyah institution that is telling the mother, oh mother, haram, we should not do that. It's usually the other way around, isn't it? It's usually the mother that educates the daughter. But here we have an example of a daughter that is educating the mother. Number two, this is a household that there are no males. It's that there are only two female members, the mother and the daughter. So if the mother is not that good in these things, how did the daughter, from where did the daughter bring this taqwa, this ilm, this knowledge, this very statement that she uttered? From society, from the regime, from Umar ibn al-Khattab, from the adl culture that is predominant in the Madaniyan society, that is influential and penetrating every household and creating an argument and a conversation and tension between a mother and a daughter. Then Asim gets married to this girl. They bring a daughter called Layla. Layla gets married to someone called Abdul Aziz ibn Marwan, and they beget a son called Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. Khalifa al-Mu'mineen, Umar ibn al-Khattab, the Khalifa, the ruler, is asking his son to get married to a woman that sells milk, that knocks on the door to sell milk from Bani Hilal. And he is from Bani al-Khattab, the ruler. And this is a lesson to every father, that look for the muttaqeen. Don't look for the family. Don't look for the prestige. Look for someone that can be a decent grandmother to Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. And to me, this is the sadaqah jariyah of Umar ibn al-Khattab. His ability to benefit the ummah of Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, not only during his life, but even after his death, through encouraging a marriage that will bring Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, that will rule the Muslim ummah for 2 years and fill it with adl. Until today, 2004, in the States, we are talking about the life of Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. And you are coming here, not because of me, but because of Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. Who gets credit for that? Umar ibn al-Khattab. Because he is the one that supervised and administered this marriage. He could have overheard this conversation and left. He could have overheard this conversation and punished the mother for the ghish and for the cheating. He could overheard this conversation and asked any one of the common masses to get married to this daughter, because she is a poor daughter, why should I bring my son, a poor girl, why should I nominate my son for her? No, but I want the best. I'm selfish in these things. I want the best for me, I want the best for the Muslim Ummah, and I want the best for my sons. And nothing is wrong with that. This is a treasure that I have discovered. I'm not going to give it to you, I'm going to give it to my son. And Asim was a good son, and Asim was a good husband. And they brought Layla, and Layla got married to Abdul Aziz ibn Marwan. Who is then Abdul Aziz ibn Marwan? Okay, now we talk about the Umayyad Khilafah, the end of the Khilafah al-Rashida. I'm not going to talk about Ali and Muawiyah and all the rest of these things, because I've promised not to speak politics. But just in a nutshell, the Umayyad Khilafah that began with the rise of Muawiyah ibn Abi Sufyan, and then with his sons Yazid and Muawiyah the second, Marwan, Abdul Malik, Al-Walid, etc., etc. About 13 or 14 Khalifa. Muawiyah ibn Abi Sufyan, he became the first Umayyad Khalifa after the death of Ali ibn Abi Talib. And then he introduced the hereditary rule, which was not accepted by the allies, the supporters of Ali ibn Abi Talib, that later became an institutionalized madrasa after the death of the martyrdom of Al-Husayn and became known as the Shia. And the rebels in Al-Hijaz, led by Abdullah ibn Zubayr. Oh, sorry, I'm speaking history. Yani, forgive me. But just to introduce Abdul Aziz ibn Marwan, you have to understand where he comes from. Then he crushes these rebellious movements, but they begin to develop more and more and bring Khawarij and bring all sorts of trends. And then he dies, and then he is succeeded with Yazid, a powerful leader, a military leader rather than a politician. Military means he crushes any opposition. Was not liked that much by even the ulama of his time. Yazid was very powerful, and he institutionalized the Umayyad Khilafah or dynasty. But then when he died, he was succeeded with an infant, young boy, called Muawiyah in his 20s. Extremely weak, inexperienced. But in addition to that, he died soon. That strengthened the rebellious movements led by Abdullah ibn Zubayr in Hijaz. Strengthened the rebellions because they were encouraged that now we have a weak ruler, young boy, now we can rebel. But then the cousin of Muawiyah ibn Abi Sufyan, Marwan ibn al-Hakam, bear with me please, some names, but it will become clear in a minute. Marwan ibn al-Hakam, the cousin of Muawiyah ibn Abi Sufyan, takes the leadership. And for the first time, the leadership is taken from the descendants as sons to cousins. Al-intiqal min al-bayt al-Sufyani ila al-bayt al-Marwani. The leadership of the Umayyad transfers from the house of Sufyan, Muawiyah ibn Abi Sufyan, to the house of Marwan. And they are related, they are cousins. Marwan ibn al-Hakam is basically the grandfather of Abdul Aziz ibn Marwan. Okay? Marwan ibn al-Hakam is the father of Abdul Aziz, the son of Marwan ibn al-Hakam. You get it? So, Abdul Aziz ibn Marwan is the father of Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. Ibn Marwan ibn al-Hakam, the cousin of Muawiyah ibn Abi Sufyan. Good? You understand? Alhamdulillah. I sometimes doubt my ability. If you all raise your hand and say, we don't understand anything, I'll be shocked. Then I'll go home. But this is the link. To me, it's fascinating. You don't have to learn the descendants and the lineages. But to the Arab people, Arab historians, it's quite important. Just to follow. To me, I'm not taking it from this tribal. I'm taking it in service of the household. I want to show you that Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, from the mother's side, came from a decent woman that used to sell milk. And from the father's side, he came from Marwan ibn al-Hakam. Marwan ibn al-Hakam, who is he? The grandfather of Abdul Aziz. He's a tabi'i. Simple as that. Tabi'iyun jaleel. Great tabi'i. And he was the katib of Uthman ibn Affan. He was very closely related, worked as a writer to Uthman ibn Affan radiyallahu anhu. Marwan ibn al-Hakam had two had various sons. One of them is Abdul Aziz ibn Marwan, the father of Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. But he had another son called Abdul Malik ibn Marwan. Abdul Malik ibn Marwan is more famous than Abdul Aziz. You know why? Simply because he was the Khalifa at one time, a powerful Khalifa. You know Al-Hajjaj? Al-Hajjaj used to work under the leadership of Abdul Malik ibn Marwan. Muhammad ibn Yusuf al-Thaqafi, the Wali of Yemen, he is the brother of Al-Hajjaj. He used to work under the leadership of Marwan ibn al-Hakam. Marwan ibn al-Hakam is known because, again, under his leadership, that the Hind and the Sindh were opened by the Muslims. Very powerful ruler. Not liked very much, again, by some of the scholars, because he was considered brutal. But again, Abdul Malik ibn Marwan was a great scholar. And this is one of the ironies in history, that on one side you look at this character, brutal, harsh. He can kill you in a minute. He will not have problems with that. But then he will come in the night and cry. This is, to me, can be a contradiction. Ironic, sophisticated. It means what? It means that they will not tolerate rebellious movements. But in addition to, if there is no rebellious movement, they are willing to build mosques, they are willing to accommodate scholars, provided that these institutions and these personalities do not undermine their sovereignty, their legitimacy. So this is maybe a way of understanding this contradiction in the characters of these rulers. So Abdul Malik ibn Marwan is one of the great scholars and fuqaha of Medina, the brother of Abdul Aziz, the son of Marwan. So Abdul Malik ibn Marwan is who? To Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, his uncle. Isn't that right? Okay. Abdul Malik ibn Marwan was min kibar fuqaha al-Madina, and he is ranked in the same class or tabaqa as Sa'id ibn al-Musayyib, a well-known tabi'i that all of us know. Abdul Malik ibn Marwan is ranked and placed in that same tabaqa, which means that he was a great faqih. And to me, I sometimes smile when I read about these things, and I say to myself, those rulers were considered by some of the scholars of their time as authoritarian. But these authoritarian rulers were very knowledgeable people. And it was not easy to go and lecture them about being good rulers or fear Allah, etc. You have to be a very sophisticated scholar to be able to persuade them. And that's why when you hear things about Al-Hasan al-Basri speaking to this ruler, or Abu Hanifa speaking to this ruler, or Malik speaking to Ja'far al-Mansur, you have to take it seriously, by the way. A, for a scholar to have access to meet this ruler, this is not easy to have access. You know, this ruler cannot be, at one stage, the rulers ceased to attend Jum'ah khutbah, ceased to attend Jum'ah prayers. You cannot see them. You hear about Abdul Malik ibn Marwan, but all what you can see is that big palace over there. But you will not be able to see Abdul Malik ibn Marwan easily, because they feared assassination, etc. So for this person who is praying in the mosque to go inside the palace and meet Abdul Malik ibn Marwan was an achievement. It's like going to the White House today and waiting for 2 months for an appointment. And you have 5 or 10 minutes to speak. You have to be well prepared. And that's why when I read these conversations that happen between those rulers and those ulama, I take the conversations very seriously. Then, Abdul Malik ibn Marwan, we spoke about the uncle, we spoke about the grandfather Marwan ibn al-Hakam. Let's speak a little bit about Abdul Aziz ibn Marwan, the father of Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. Again, a man of knowledge and scholarship. He narrated various hadiths that he heard directly from Abu Huraira radiallahu anhu, and in An-Nasa'i he is considered to be thiqa or trustworthy, and Ibn Dawood in his Musnad he has some hadiths narrated by Abdul Aziz ibn Marwan. So if you come across these hadiths, remember this talk, please. Oh, this is the father of Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, he is the brother of Marwan ibn al-Hakam, he is the son of Marwan, he is the brother of Abdul Malik ibn Marwan, and he is the son of Marwan ibn al-Hakam. Okay? He was also, in addition, a man of kindness, great kindness. He would feed every day 1,000 poor person. And look, okay, let's bring Umar ibn Aziz into the equation. Now imagine when a son, when he is young, sees his father feeding 1,000 poor person every day. Will you then be shocked when that person grows up as a kind person? You see, the problem with us is that we read Umar al-Aziz was very kind, very kind. He used to do this, he used to do that. MashaAllah, very good. But no, no, go back to his father. And you will see that his father was extremely kind. And this is an example to us, parents, that our children need to see role models. They need to see not a lecture about kindness. They need to see a kind father. And that's why yesterday the fundraising, this was an amazing event, because yes, people have given money, but the sons have to witness that as well, have to see that the father is funding a good cause. So the concept of the role model. When Abdul Aziz, and this is another third point about Abdul Aziz, when he wanted to get married, he said to his father and his mother, أريد أن أتزوج بنتا من أهل بيت لهم صلاح. It really summarizes what I'm trying to. It is as Abdul Aziz is sitting here now and talking to you and saying, this is exactly what I wanted to do. He says to his mother and father, I want you to choose for me a daughter that comes from a decent, good household. He didn't say, I want a pretty girl and that's it. He didn't say all the things that we usually say. No, he connected the girl to the household because he knew. Look, his mother was his grandmother was, you know, he has this story. He knows that his grandmother was a pious woman that used to sell milk. Yet Umar al-Khattab got her married to his son. So he has this role model. He wants to repeat it with himself. This is very important, brothers and sisters, because today we either lack this role model of a parent, of a father that married the mother for pious reasons, or even on the level of companionship. Everyone wants to get married to the rich and to the professional and to the educated. And nothing is wrong with that. But when that becomes the deriving objective, then you will not have, I'm sorry to say this, you will not have children that are like Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, even ruling their household through justice, not necessarily ruling the United States. We are recording, okay. So, ruling the Muslims in the United States, Muslim community. So, the household, the importance of the household. Just a final addition to Abdul Aziz ibn Marwan. Abdul Aziz ibn Marwan was the wali of Egypt for 20 years, was the governor of Egypt for 20 years. And that's why Umar ibn Abdul Aziz is well celebrated in Egypt, because Abdul Aziz was the governor of Egypt for 90 years, and he cultivated and built a city called Helwan in Egypt. And you can visit Helwan today in Egypt. That was built by the father of Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. You want to have a break? I want to have a break. Okay, since we are talking about Abdul Aziz and Abdul Malik, just a final thing that I did not want to mention it now, but just by mention it because it's related to the wife of Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. Basically to say that Umar ibn Abdul Aziz married Fatima, who is the daughter of Abdul Malik ibn Marwan. So he married his cousin. Okay, that's since we are talking about Abdul Malik. So you are expected, if you are in a course now, and I'm going to put it some exam questions, you are expected to know something about Umar ibn al-Khattab and the event with regards to the girl that sold the milk. You are expected to know something about this Marwan family and the transfer of power from Muawiyah ibn Abi Sufyan to the Marwan household. And then take it, the father Marwan ibn al-Hakam, he has two sons, Abdul Malik and Abdul Aziz. Then Abdul Malik has a beautiful daughter called Fatima. Abdul Aziz has a beautiful boy called Umar. Fatima and Umar get married, and they have a beautiful son who unfortunately dies at the age of 17 called Abdul Malik. Okay, this is political history or social history, call it whatever. I just thought that I will tell you this. So what's the point? The point is, I am telling you, look, there is a good father, there is a good uncle, there is a good uncle that has brought up properly his daughter to the extent that Abdul Aziz got this daughter married to his son Umar. So you have a household that is very convenient, very suitable to bring in good people, such as Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. Do you want me to make things a little bit, if we have, yeah, we can end it here. We can talk about the sister of Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. Would you like to know something about Maymuna, the sister of Umar ibn Abdul Aziz? It's a fascinating character. And maybe in London, I would be delivering some talks on women personalities, female personalities. And one of them is Maymuna, called Umm al-Baneen. Umm al-Baneen, bint Abdul Aziz, or the daughter of Abdul Aziz. She is the sister of Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. You want to know who is the husband of... basically, the husband is the son of Abdul Malik ibn Marwan, who is the brother of Fatima, the wife of Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. So it's, again, cousin relation marriage. Okay, it's all within the family. She was a woman of great kindness. Oh, yes. So actually, knowing who is her husband is very significant, because al-Walid ibn Abd al-Malik became the Khalifa al-Mu'mineen at one stage. So she was the wife of the Khalifa al-Mu'mineen. I'm saying this to appreciate that why she was kind. It's very difficult to see these royal family members kind and outreaching the community, helpful, of great humbleness, and objecting to a lot of the injustices that were taking place under the leadership of her husband. Al-Walid ibn Abd al-Malik, believe it or not, continued to employ Al-Hajjaj, brutal governor, continued to employ him as the ruler of, or as the governor of Baghdad. Because Abd al-Malik ibn Marwan, his father, this was in the will, that do not get rid of Al-Hajjaj. For he is brutal, yes. And thirsty for blood, yes, but he kept the security of our empire. So Al-Walid ibn Abd al-Malik continued to employ Al-Hajjaj. Who was objecting to that? His wife, Maymuna. And if the camera of the historian goes inside the household, you will register conversations that will take in place between Al-Walid and between his wife, and the wife saying, why are you employing this unjust person? He should be sacked. And one day, and this is another story, Al-Hajjaj overheard this conversation and indirectly went and met Al-Walid ibn Abd al-Malik and said, Ya Amir al-Mu'mineen, you shouldn't hear too much what women say. Ya Amir al-Mu'mineen, you should remarry more beautiful girls. And she overheard Al-Hajjaj and she went to her husband and said, Ya Amir al-Mu'mineen, I want to speak to Al-Hajjaj in private. And wallahi, brothers and sisters, you can read the most powerful discourse that comes on the tongue of a woman to the most brutal character in the Islamic history, i.e. Al-Hajjaj, where Al-Hajjaj is becoming that little. Al-Hajjaj says, after following this conversation, he said, I wish that while she was talking, the earth opened and swallowed me. Because this is the sister of Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. She said to him, and it's a long conversation, she said, do you belittle women? Women give their jewelry to Al-Walid ibn Abdul Malik so that he puts it in Bayt al-Mal and he pays salaries for people like you. We women pay your salary, O brutal Al-Hajjaj. We pay the salary of your brother Muhammad ibn Yusuf al-Thaqafi in Yemen to kill and to create injustice. Al-Hajjaj goes to Al-Walid ibn Abd al-Malik. He says, Ya Amir al-Mu'mineen. And yellow-faced, he said, why did you ask for this summit meeting to happen? She said to me so and so and so and so. And Waleed ibn Abd al-Malik laughed and he said, Waylak or Wayhak, woe to you, don't you know who is she? She is the daughter of Abdul Aziz ibn Marwan ibn al-Hakam. But of course he did not sack al-Hajjaj, unfortunately. But to show you this Maymuna, you see, sometimes there are things that are happening in the household that me and you, we don't know about, but they are happening. They are not registered very forcefully in history, but they are happening. She was extremely kind. She would make tahajjud every day. She was considered a great muhaddith by a great muhaddith like Abu Zur'a Abdul Rahman ibn Amr. He is the muhaddith of al-Sham. He died in 281 Islamic Hijra calendar. He says that Maymuna is a muhaddith, and Abu Zur'a is a great muhaddith. And when he says that Abu Zur'a, when he says that a great muhaddith is a great muhaddith, you have to rest assured that he is a great muhaddith. Great muhaddith means what? Means that he heard from the tabi'in and tabi'at tabi'in, and he is an authority in silsilat al-sanad, in the chain of narration, that then someone like Bukhari and someone like Ibn Dawood and Nisa'i, Ibn Majah, etc., can come and take this hadith, where Maymuna in the chain of narration is considered as a trustworthy source. She was so kind that she said, and I can end it here, she said, Wallahi, to please a Muslim, to make a Muslim happy through helping him, is, she says, I have this desire, this shahwa, to help people. And wallahi, helping people is to me of a stronger shahwa, stronger desire than desire to eat the most beautiful food while I am extremely hungry, or to drink the most cold water while I am extremely thirsty. And this is what I was trying to say yesterday in the fundraising, but the time, and I had these 2 minutes. These people were kind, and they enjoyed being kind. They were not kind in an artificial way. They were kind in a genuine way. This is the sister of Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. With that, I finish with the household. I did not say anything about Umar ibn Abdul Aziz as yet, but I hope now we understand this base that was responsible to producing Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. أقول قولي هذا وأستغفر الله لي ولكم فاستغفروه إنه هو الغفور الرحيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. بسم الله وكفى والصلاة والسلام على من اصطفى سيدنا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه ومن تبعه بإحسان إلى يوم الدين. Brothers and sisters, I spoke about the household, okay, and we've exhausted talking about, we entered a little bit of the grandfather and the, okay, this is the household. You've promised, you might say, to talk to us about another additional institutions that supplemented or supported the role of the household, namely the mu'addib, the moral trainers, and the companions, the company. Okay, at the outset, let me tell you the mu'addib of Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, his name is simple, Tawus. Tawus ibn Kaysan. Sometimes I imagine, I'm not very good at computing and web developing, etc., but for those who are good at developing webs, they can do it for their own. What you can do is that you can place Umar ibn Abdul Aziz at the center of the page, encircled. And then you draw a line showing how he is related to Abdul Malik, and then how is he related to Marwan, and how is he related to Fatima, and how is... These circles are clickable. So you click on Abdul Malik ibn Marwan, and it gives you something about Abdul Malik ibn Marwan. And if there are any names in that list, they are to be placed in a circle, clickable circle, so that it gives you... To me, this is a good way of broadening our perception to history. Because like this, Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, yes, it's good. But Umar ibn Aziz does not function in a vacuum. He's not alone. Okay, he has mother, he has father, he has sister, he has someone called Maymuna that is able to debate the most brutal governor. He has powerful people behind him, next to him, and after him. So this is quite interesting. What I do sometimes is that, for example, Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, and then I say, okay, between inverted commas, see something about Abdul Aziz. Then I go and search about on Abdul Aziz. Fatima, the wife of Umar. I put open brackets, go and search something about Fatima. This gives me the depth of the character. This contributes to me understanding more and better Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. It's not a waste of time. It's not diverting. It's not. So this is just by way of simplifying things. So if you want to draw another clickable circle, click on Tawus, the Mu'addib. Because listen, it's common sense. If I tell you that Tawus is the trainer of Umar, then it will be extremely necessary to know who is Tawus. If you want to make things more complicated, to know who are the trainers of Tawus, who are the shuyukh of Tawus, who is the father of Tawus, where does he come from, and how does his city affected him so much for him to become a professional trainer, to be elected by Abdul Aziz ibn Marwan, the ruler of Egypt for 20 years, entrusted to train Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. This is, to me, it's a paradigm shift. It's an opening of Islamic history, rather than perceiving Islamic history as dates. You know, Umayyad, Ali, Muawiyah, Abbasite, Uthmani Khilafah. It's interesting, this is good, and we study that, and I teach that. But what is more interesting is to zoom inside the minds of these people to see how they behaved and how they functioned. Okay? So, who was the companion of Umar ibn Abdul Aziz? Who did Umar ibn Abdul Aziz hang around with? Umar ibn Abdul Aziz did not like to hang around people with his age. He always hanged around with people who were senior than him, older than him. And of course, I'm not into the philosophy of education, and I don't know too much about, you know, but I do believe, of course, that children have to play together, and, you know, everyone has to. But I also do believe, from a personal experience, that accompanying at least 1 hour a day people who are older than me, not people who smoke or people who, no, older me than me, good people, older than me, adds to my maturity, contributes to my character, in addition to reading books, in addition to many things that you know, you and me know about. So Umar ibn Abdul Aziz did not hang around too much with the shabab of his time. Who did he hang around with? Now draw in your mind another clickable circle, but this time it doesn't have to be that clickable, because a lot of us know that character. Abdullah ibn Umar ibn al-Khattab. Who is Abdullah ibn Umar? He is the son of Umar ibn al-Khattab. But now you should know something else. He is the brother of Asim, that got married to this girl and begot Layla, the mother of... So he's related to Umar ibn Abdul Aziz from the mother's side. So what are you telling us? I am telling you this, and as simple as this. Umar ibn Abdul Aziz was tremendously influenced by Abdullah ibn Umar. Prove it, I'll prove it. Once he came to the house, and as a young boy, he said to his mother, أنا أحب أن أكون مثل خالي. I love, or I would like to be like my khal, the one who is related to you, O mother. I want to be like Abdullah ibn Umar. To me, this is a golden statement. Now ask your children, what do you want to be when you grow up? And who knows? If you tell them something about Abdullah ibn Umar, they might say, oh father, oh mother, I wish I can be like Abdullah ibn Umar. And the mother of Umar ibn Abdul Aziz said to him, you want to be like Abdullah ibn Umar? Abdullah ibn Umar was famous even during that time as a scholar, as a sahabi, as a zahid. Abdullah ibn Umar is a fascinating character. and there is no time to. But again, draw this list, clickable circle, and go and find something about Abdullah ibn Umar. Not Abdullah ibn Umar, the alim. Yes, of course. No one disputes that. The fiqh of Abdullah ibn Umar. There is a book called The Fiqh of Abdullah ibn Umar as opposed to The Fiqh of Abdullah ibn Abbas. I'm not talking about the fiqh. I'm talking about the character. Abdullah ibn Umar, the young boy, Abdullah ibn Umar is among the young companions of brothers and sisters. He, when Rasulullah died, he was young. And that's why he lived many, many years and met many, many tabi'een. This person was the living role model and example for this young boy called Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. Umar ibn Abdul Aziz did not want to become a footballer or an actor. His role model was Abdullah ibn Umar. And it was a love relationship. Abdullah ibn Umar loved him so much because the family of Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, i.e. Abdul Aziz ibn Marwan, when he was assigned to become the ruler of Egypt, he was before that living in Medina. So he took everything. He took his wife and everybody in the household. Abdullah ibn Umar said to the mother of Umar ibn Aziz, leave him with me. Leave Umar ibn Abdul Aziz with me. Because I see in him Sima'u Salihin. I see in him the characters of the good people. And he reminds me of my father, Umar ibn al-Khattab. You see, brothers, I'm sorry, I sometimes get a bit nervous, but you see, this is a great boy. This is a great heritage. But you have here in the middle a mediator that is recognizing this great potential. This great potential could have been neglected, could have been deserted, could have been allowed to travel to Egypt and die and live there. But no, history freezes. The mediator comes in the middle and recruits this great potential and makes him stick with this great heritage for him to become nothing but great. Abdullah ibn Umar, until today, gets sadaqa jariyah in the same way as Umar al-Khattab gets the sadaqa jariyah, because those are the discoverers of the great people such as Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. Abdullah ibn Umar gave you and me a just ruler called Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. These people are not known. You see, Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, but at the back, is the sister, is the mother, is the father, is the khal, is the uncle from the mother's side called Abdullah ibn Umar, and of course the great, great, great grandfather, Umar ibn al-Khattab, who administered and supervised the marriage. The creator of the household. Now, Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, and this is another magnificent quotation. I want to be like Abdullah ibn Umar. Today, okay, let me rephrase it. For a tabi'i or a tabi'i tabi'i to say that I want to be like a companion, what does it tell you about Umar ibn Abdul Aziz? In one word, a man of great ambition. Ambition, brothers and sisters. This is one of the themes that I want to focus on. Ambition, not in dunya. I know that I'm speaking to highly intelligent people, elites, successful in this dunya. But ambition in the akhirah, to be as decent and as good as Abdullah ibn Umar. I want to be, O mother, like this companion. And he did not choose any companion. You see, look, A, he aspired to be like a companion. And B, he chose one of the best companions to be like. He reminds me this beloved character, Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, with Ibrahim alayhi salam, where he says, وَاجْعَلْنِي لِلْمُتَّقِينَ إِمَامًا. إِمَامًا, make me a leader for the muttaqeen, not for the Muslimin or the mu'mineen. Make me a leader for the best people. Umar ibn Abdul Aziz want to be like the best companion. The mother says, you want to be like Abdullah ibn Umar? He says, yes, indeed, I want to be like Abdullah ibn Umar. And more or less, he accomplished this by becoming this just ruler that today in 2004 in Bay Area, we are talking about this person. It's because of this ambition when he was young to be as great as these people that made Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. You see, I promised not to speak about politics. I promised to speak about things that might be in the minds and hearts of many of your children. But they just need an opportunity to explore and to articulate and to express, and some form of encouragement and push. Okay, this is the companion. Who is the mu'addib? Tawus. Tawus is simply. He's not simple at all. But anyway, Tawus ibn Kaysan, faqih al-Yaman, the faqih of Yemen. Tabi'i, he's a tabi'i. He met over 50 companions. He was a student of Abdullah ibn Abbas. You see, when I said to you the teachers, I'm giving you now all the homework. His teacher is who? Abdullah ibn Abbas. Then you open another circle, clickable circle. Who is Abdullah ibn Abbas? Oh no, this is another book, another chapter, another conference, another talk. Abdullah ibn Abbas, Habrul Ummah. But anyway, let's go back to Tawus, the product of Abdullah ibn Abbas, the trainer of Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. And we can take it from there endlessly. His sheikh is Abdullah ibn Abbas. And when I say his sheikh, Abdullah ibn Abbas, that means that they were like this, Tawus and Abdullah ibn Abbas. It means that Tawus heard all the hadiths that Abdullah ibn Abbas heard from the mouth of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And know this, know that Abdullah ibn Abbas, when Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam died, he was a young boy. So, a powerful memory, powerful amount of knowledge. All this knowledge was transferred. You know, Tawus says what? He says, I listened to the Quran from the mouth of Abdullah ibn Abbas, and not a verse that he would not stop and say to me the tafsir of this verse as he have heard it from the mouth of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. He wasn't reading Ibn Kathir or At-Tabari. No. He was reading Ibn Abbas narrating from the mouth of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Tawus is the trainer of Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. Imagine what a trainer means. You look at him, how he behaves, how he shakes hand, how he smiles. Don't mess with Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. So, Tawus ibn Kaysan, and his sheikh Abdullah ibn Abbas loved him so much. He says a dangerous statement, Abdullah ibn Abbas. إِنِّي لَأَظُنُّ طَاوُوسًا مِنْ أَهْلِ الْجَنَّةِ. As simple as that. I believe, he says, Abdullah ibn Abbas, I think that Tawus is from the people of Jannah. He will go to Jannah. For Abdullah ibn Abbas to make this statement, it was not a statement based on the ability of Tawus to learn the hadith of Prophet Muhammad. No. It means that Abdullah ibn Abbas saw Tawus in his entire comprehensive attitude and character, in his taqwa, in his household, in the private and in the public sphere, as a teacher supervising his student, for him to say this dangerous statement. Imagine, brothers and sisters, imagine a companion tells you this. What would you say? I know Salihin in history, that companions told them this, but only in their dreams. And they were glad, excited. I saw Abdullah ibn Abbas coming in the dream and saying, no, but Tawus, he heard it from the mouth of Abdullah ibn Abbas, and he was not dreaming. Tawus ibn Kaysan was a man that feared Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Okay, probably some of us are hungry here, including myself probably. When we go to a shop and we see chicken rolling over fire, you might say, this increases my desire to eat. For Tawus, it demolishes his appetite to eat, because these burning chicken remind him of the burning bodies in hellfire. This sensitivity, you see, this is the character of a trainer. You have to be sensitive to everything and anything. And by the way, I'm quoting these not to shock you or not to... I'm not trying to create a culture here based on this attitude, but take them in context. Take them, agree or disagree with what happens, but take it in context and take the final lesson. The final lesson is sensitivity. You don't agree with the attitude, not a problem. But make sure that you have sensitivity, that you are sensitive. I'm not asking you not to lose appetite when you see a burning chicken. I'm not asking you for that. I'm asking you to have sensitivity towards your iman. That when you see that your iman is eroding, hey, be careful, something wrong is happening. Be like Taus. You know, this is the point I'm trying to make. Taus would not sleep during the before hour, 2-3 hours before the Fajr time, the last third of the night. He would not sleep during that period. There isn't a problem with that because he's making tahajjud. There isn't a problem. The problem with Taus is that he does not expect any Muslim to be asleep during that period. Once he went to a house of a friend and knocked on the door 2 or 3 hours before Fajr, and the person came from the household, not the person that he was wanting, but one of the household, and he said, "Where is Fulan?" They said, "He's asleep." He said, "ما ظننت أن أحدا ينام بالسحر." I never thought that someone sleeps at that time. Then when do we sleep then? So if I'm just imagine if he had a mobile phone and cell phone at 3 o'clock in the morning, expect a phone call. This is Taus calling you, and don't tell him, "Sorry, Sheikh Taus, I was asleep." No, he'd be disappointed. This is the. Again, I'm not trying, but I need. Sometimes I feel we need to be shocked. To look at these high examples, not to break our neck, but just at least to aim for something, to draw this high ambition model, to aspire to it. I don't necessarily have to become like Taus, but at least I have a role model that I can aspire to, and if I don't reach Taus, I will certainly reach something that is close to Taus. Do you understand? If you are aiming for a B, study for an A. You might not get the A, but you will certainly get the B, not the C. So we aspire for Taus to be 50% as sensitive as Taus. But if we don't mention Taus, so as not to shock you and hurt your feelings, you will not have anything to aspire to except for your sons or your whatever, football player. And you can be as ambitious as that. I want to be a football, not a problem. But then leave Taus alone. And Taus as well, as for our bachelors, He didn't like to see bachelors. He said, لا يتم نسك الشاب حتى يتزوج. The complete piety and devoutness of a young person is not complete if he's not married. And everyone, when he comes and talks with people, and he asks this brother, "You are married?" He says, "No." He says, "Why you are not married? You should get married." This is a model of sensitivity, of iman, of ilm, of fiqh. And this, I have not mentioned anything about the fiqh of Taus. This is something else. He is a mujtahid. He is a mufti of Yemen. But this is something. I'm talking about Taus, the human being. This person was the personal trainer for Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. And let me just talk a little bit about al-mu'addib, or mu'addib in history. Or I'll skip that actually, because we can say it in 1 minute if you don't mind. The mu'addib is that role that was given to those people that were assigned the responsibility of teaching young people manners and adab. And usually the khulafa, the royals, used to employ mu'addibin to teach their children etiquettes, manners, not just how to hold the fork and the knife. No, it's how to behave and how to, for example, I'll give you an example of dawr al-mu'addib, or the role of the mu'addib. Abdul Malik ibn Marwan, for example, he had a mu'addib for his children, and he advises the mu'addib as to how to train his children. And he says, Abdul Malik, he says to the mu'addib in a very beautiful long conversation, says, "Allimhu al-sidq kama tu'allimhu al-Qur'an," etc., etc. Teach him to be trustworthy and to speak the truth in the same way that you teach him the Qur'an. So while you are teaching Qur'an, teach him manners. وَحْمِلُهُمْ عَلَى الْأَخْلَاقِ الْجَمِيلَةِ. And teach them good attitude and good manners. And make them sit with the noble people, especially people of knowledge, and don't make them sit with deviant people and low people that will shout and insult and will do anything that is bad. I want you to contemporize these examples. So don't make them sit with the people probably who smoke, who take drugs. You can contemporize, but this is, I'm just giving you the sort of advices. And if there is no mu'addib, you yourself can adopt these advices as a father. وَمُرْهُمْ فَلْيَسْتَاكُوا. Even teach them to use the miswak and to clean their teeth. So it's not just about manners, excuse me, assalamu alaikum. No, even going into the hygiene. وَمُرْهُمْ فَالْيَسْتَاكُ. To use the miswak. You can use the toothpaste. It's not a problem, but just clean your teeth. That's the point, you see. don't take things everything. وليمص الماء مصة ولا يعبوه عبة. And let them, when they drink water, drink it slowly, not to fill their stomach with like this. يعني telling the مؤدب how to educate the children in how to drink, how to clean, how to behave. ووكرهم في العلانية وذللهم في السر. Respect them in public. And this is an advice to the fathers. Respect your children in public. وذللهم في السر. And humiliate them in private. You've done this today. You shouldn't. Don't do it again. But in public, my beloved son, no one is better than him. In private, next time you do this, I'll beat you up. This is the beauty of it. Because you are bringing men. But don't harm the feeling of the children in front of strangers. وَضْرِبْهُمْ عَلَى الْكَذِبْ. And punish them for lying. For كذب leads to fujur, and fujur leads to jahannam. And جَنِّبْهُمْ شَتْمْ أَعْرَاضَ الرِّجَالِ. Don't make them insult or attack the honor of men or people. وَحْمِلْهُمْ عَلَى صِلَةِ الْأَرْحَامِ. And encourage them to establish links with their relatives. With their relatives. These advices were said by عبد الملك ابن مروان, who all of us now should know something about, to the مؤدب, but they could be advices, general advices to all of us. When you have children, or if you have children, when you have children, and tell your wife these advices, or when you get married, tell your wife about these advices. There is a very famous story that a lot of us probably know, but without the names, and here Tawus is probably adding to this gap. Tawus used to, this is the role of the trainer, Tawus used to, and this is something, just again an interruption as usual, my mind is not very organized. Bear in mind that Abdul Aziz ibn Marwan, the father of Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, is not with Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. Umar ibn Abdul Aziz is the ruler of Egypt. Umar ibn Abdul Aziz is in Medina, where Abdullah ibn Umar is. The mu'addib, the caretaker of Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, is Tawus. So Tawus is living with Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, or the opposite. Umar ibn Aziz is living with Tawus. He is acting as the father. Okay? So Abdul Aziz, the father, asked Tawus, he said to him, among the advices, he said he must attend the Jama'ah prayer every day, 5 times a day. And make sure he does. And Tawus, of course, the faqih, when he comes, goes to the prayer, he takes Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. One day, Umar Aziz was late. He attended the Jama'ah but was late. And Tawus, after the Salah, asked him, why you were late? Look at this. Look at this. Again, the mediator. You see, these are creating great people. If you ignore them, khalas, he's dead. But if you, all the time, supervision. You know, where have you been? Why didn't you come to Salah early? Umar ibn Abdul Aziz had a beautiful hair. He said, the servant was combing my hair, and this took time. Tawus was very upset. Look at this, the mu'addib now. The mu'addib is in action. He sent a letter from no emails, no internet, nothing, no mobile, no cell. He sent a letter on the camel from Medina to Egypt, telling Abdul Aziz ibn Marwan that your son on one day, in that particular day, came late to the Salah. What did the father do? Did he say, okay, forget it, inshallah, he's on the right path, brother Tawus, since you are with him, I trust you, do whatever you want? No. He sent a letter and a messenger. He did not send a letter. He sent a messenger traveling all the way from Egypt to Medina. You know who that messenger was? Was a barber. And he was instructed to shave the entire hair of Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. And the letter of the father later said, this is so that the hair does not become an impediment between you and the masjid. The father did not throw his son with the mu'addib. The father did not say that he is hanging around with Abdullah ibn Umar and I know him very well. No. You are the father, you should be responsible. You send letters, you send messengers, you spend money, do it. Because this is your son. Even if he's not Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. Even if your son is not Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. But he is your son. He is your daughter. She is your daughter. Take care of them. Then I can smile or laugh or joke and say, well, how can you do that if you yourself don't attend the jama'ah in the mosque. Okay, you can delete that if it hurts feelings. But we stop here with regards to the mu'addib and with regards to the companion. Now, what is the effect of all that? The effect of all that is that you had a pious child, Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, hafiz of Quran at the age of probably 10 or 11. One day he came to his mother crying at the age of 10 or 11. And the mother said, "Why you are crying? And look what a child says." Not because they didn't give me candy or sweets or chocolate. He said, "Dhakartu al-maut fabakayt." I remember death and I cried. Because he's hafiz of Quran. He says, "I remember death and I cried." What does the mother do or say? She begins to cry. Okay, look. The son is influencing a father. The son is influencing the mother. Is this the first time? No. Because the grandmother of Umar ibn Abdul Aziz influenced her mother by not mixing the water with the milk, remember? So you can have this equation coming in the opposite direction. You can have a son who is so good that when he sees his mother or father doing something wrong, he will tell them. Or he can remind his mother and father with his attitude to the extent that the mother or the father will cry because of his attitude. And imagine when the mother cries because the son gave her a reminder about Akhirah. Imagine how proud, how delighted she becomes. Now, this is Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, the product of all these things. Now, Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, the outcome of this in relation to his wife and in relation to his son. I'll try to be quick because I'm out of 10 minutes. I won't talk too much about his wife because simple as that, his wife Fatima was so obedient. She was in love with Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. And I'm talking about emotional love and love that is based on respect. And to me, this is the best love. You know, the best relation is that which is based on love and respect. I don't want you to respect me and hate me. And I don't want you to love me and mess with me. If I can combine the two, this is great. And he combined the two with his wife. Fatima, when she got married to Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, Fatima, the daughter of Abdul Malik ibn Marwan, the Khalifatul Mu'mineen, he gave her lots of camels, lots of palaces, lots of houses, lots of money, 100,000 dirham. Less probably than the money that was raised yesterday. But at that time, that was lots of money. Umar ibn Abdul Aziz said to her, "If you want these camels and this money, you take it and we separate. If you want me, you give me all this wealth to put it in Bayt al-Mal for the Ummah of Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wasallam." Fatima said, "Wallahi ya Amir al-Mu'mineen," look at the loving wife, "Wallahi ya Amir al-Mu'mineen, if I had more than that, I will not hesitate for 1 minute. Take it." And she took it. And wallahi, brothers and sisters, you will cry when you hear that Umar ibn Abdul Aziz will not have a small apple in his house out of piety. You see, this is how when we say the just ruler. So boxes of apple come from Bayt al-Mal to the Ummah of Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, and the son of Umar ibn Aziz is hungry. And he takes one apple, and Umar ibn Abdul Aziz hits his hand. He says, "This does not belong to us." He says, "Ya father, I haven't eaten for many, many days. My desire is for apple." Today we had lots of apples and we eat. It's okay, not a problem. But to Umar al-Aziz, everything is controlled and calculated and counted. And we are talking about a ruler. We are not talking about me and you, Khalifat al-Mu'mineen, who has access to abuse anything and everything. But no. When Umar ibn Abdul Aziz died, al-Walid, the brother of Fatima, became the Khalifa. He said to Fatima, he said, "I can bring you all the money that your husband, late husband, that when he died, he took. I can bring you the 100,000, the council." He said, she said the same thing as the daughter said to her mother with mixing the milk. She said, I would not obey Umar ibn Abdul Aziz while he was alive and disobey him while he is dead. I don't want the money. And she lived the most poor life after the death of Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, while her uncle is a Khalifa, while her father is a Khalifa, while her husband is a Khalifa, while her brother is a Khalifa. She is the one known in history to be surrounded by the Khulafa, Fatima. But zoom into the household of Fatima, you will see the poorest household, because this is the household of Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. Okay, this is the wife. And wives, by the way, tell us things that students and public audiences would not tell. So Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, we know a lot of about him from his wife. His wife says something. He says, ما كان بأكثر الناس صلاة ولا أكثرهم صياما وإنما ما رأيت أحدا أخوف منه. He did not pray a lot. He did not fast a lot. But I've never seen anyone who fears Allah like him. And this is exactly what I was again trying to say yesterday, that ibadah is good, but you have to see your responsibility. My responsibility as a ruler, I need to sleep, I can't fast. My responsibility as a ruler to establish justice, and to establish justice I have to fear Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and have taqwa. This is exactly Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. Don't think that to be good you have to pray 24 hours and fast all day like Abdullah ibn Amr ibn al-As. But see what is your responsibilities and how you can serve Allah best and pursue that route. Umar ibn Abdul Aziz would cry all the time in front of his wife. And when I read this, I say, I've put this comment, لا يستحي من أن يبكي أمام زوجته. He is not ashamed of crying in front of his wife. Nothing is wrong with crying. Who told you that crying is for women only? Crying is for anyone who has got a sensitive heart, that when he comes across a verse from the Quran, he is taken and shaken by it. He used to cry a lot, and she reported that in many incidents. And then finally, his son Abdul Malik. He had a son called Abdul Malik ibn Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. And again, his son was the most pious son among the sons of Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. And I'm not going to talk about Abdul Malik, but you can again draw this clickable circle and search who is Abdul Malik. He used to be a great reminder of his father, Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. Umar ibn Abdul Aziz would sit in the leadership chair and conduct the affairs of the Ummah, then he will go home, have some rest. Who will follow him? Abdul Malik, or Abdul Malik will go after him and will say, why, O father, you are not attending to the affairs of the Ummah? He said, I'll just have some rest. And then he says, do you guarantee that you will not die while you are asleep? Some ulama said Umar ibn Abdul Aziz did ibadah in his life out of encouragement and reminder of his son Abdul Malik. His son Abdul Malik ibn Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. But unfortunately, sadly, he died at the age of 17. So here I must catch you and say that we are talking about what? We are talking about who? In one word, we are talking about a teenager. This is an attitude of a teenager that did not have problems with girls and with love and this and drugs. And no, his problem was that whenever he reads the Quran, he cries. His problem is that he wants to make sure that his father, the ruler, is attending the affairs of the Ummah. He once said to his father, O my father, I fear that one day we will not meet in Yawm al-Qiyamah. One of us will go to hellfire, and probably me. Look at this. Think, a boy of 17 thinking about the hereafter, and going and reporting and articulating his feelings to his father. And his father said, famously, كان يعينني على الخير. He used to help me and fund me and support me. Do I have just 1 minute to tell you about a similar incident where a son advises the father? And there are many, many incidents. Abu Yazid al-Bustami is one example, but Al-Fudayl ibn Iyad is one example. Al-Fudayl is a great Zahid. Al-Fudayl ibn Iyad was a great Zahid. Al-Fudayl would make anyone cry when he delivers talks. He made Harun al-Rashid cry. Again, this circle, clickable circle to Al-Fudayl. And there are lots of literature on him. Al-Fudayl had a son called Ali. Ali ibn Al-Fudayl. Believe it or not, but it's my, out of honesty, I'll tell you. Ali died when he was a teenager because he heard a verse from the Quran and fainted and died. Al-Fudayl had this son, Ali ibn Abi Talib. Al-Fudayl says, كان رحمه الله يساعدني على الحزن والبكاء. May Allah have mercy on my son Ali. He used to help me to be sad and to cry out of my sins. When the father, I know that I am a father, and I am sure that as fathers you would love that your sons and daughters help you to be closer to Allah. Because I know that fathers and mothers are struggling to make their sons closer to Allah. But when the son struggles to make you, O father and mother, closer to Allah, this is something amazing. And again, Ali ibn al-Fudayl said to al-Fudayl, أخاف ألا تجمعنا القيامة. يا فضيل, O my father, I fear that one day we will not meet in يوم القيامة. We will not meet in يوم القيامة. Brothers and sisters, Zakum Allah khair. I'm sorry if I have taken much time, but we've spoke about the household, we spoke about the mu'addib, we spoke about the companion, then we spoke about the outcome of the tarbiyah of Umar ibn Abdul Aziz and the effect this had on his wife Fatima and on his son Abd al-Malik. No politics, no leadership, no خليفة المؤمنين عمر بن عبد العزيز. أقول قولي هذا وأستغفر الله لي ولكم فاستغفروه إنه الغفور الرحيم.